Hello, everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and this week I'm joined again by John Steele. Hi, John, how are you?
Hi, James. Yes, all good, thanks. I think I posted four podcasts online last week, so it might be in the red zone, but I'll do my best.
Yeah, I was going to say there are 7 days in a week, but only four podcasts, so got a bit of work to be done next time. But aside from that, I thought they were very good. So thank you very much for your hard work on those. And Mike as well, and Sean. It was really entertaining listening to all of that stuff. And speaking of entertaining, you've chosen three games with quite a lot of talking points. So let's get stuck in. Our first game today is Yokohama FC against Mito. Yokohama FC won this one 3-2. They were 2-0 down in just 15 minutes. But three goals in the second half, two from Koki Ogawa and one from Sho Ito, saw them keep their 100% winning record. John, what can you tell us about this game?
Well, I think, you know, round four of the J2 season, James, so the usual disclaimer we have to add is still very, very early on. And probably too early for us to draw too many blockbuster conclusions. But for Yokohama FC, that's their fourth straight win, right? So they've actually gone clear now at the top of the sort of nascent early table. Very entertaining match as well. Yeah, against Mito, 3-2, as you said. I think on Mito, first of all, well, Mito gonna Mito, right? They showed us what they could do in the opening 15 minutes, going 2-0 up. I think that goal from Korsuke Kinoshita, I have to talk about him because I picked him out as a player to watch sort of in season previews. It was one of those kind of rare kind of rising drives that seemed to gain speed and velocity after it left his boot. So yeah, fantastic goal from him. Obviously, he was playing against his former club where he came through as a youth product, so he had a bit of extra motivation. But I think he was even upstaged by the second goal, right? Yuto Mori.
Yeah.
That curler was absolutely beautiful. But yeah, Kinoshita did lay the ball off for that, so he was involved in that as well. But yeah, the second half, I think this might be a simplistic reading of the game, but I think Ryoya Yamashita came on. At half-time, didn't he, for Yokohama FC? And he seemed to make a huge difference, if only sort of occupying some mental capacity of the Mito defenders. And it was actually on the opposite flank, Zane Isaka, who made a big difference, didn't he? His cross was collected by Sho Ito in the 50th minute, and then Ito hit the post. But Koki Ogawa, I mean, we talk about bundling the ball over the line, don't we? That was kind of the archetypal bundling from Koki Ogawa to get that in for 2-1. And then just 11 minutes later, Isaka was on hand again. He provided an inch-perfect cross for Ito to head in for 2-2. After that, there were some good saves from both goalkeepers, weren't there? Broderson kept out Kazuma Takai in the Yokohama FC goal. And then Shu Mogi, who I'm still not really sure about, to be honest, although I feel like you can never really fairly judge a Mito goalkeeper because they're always very busy. He did brilliantly to block Felipe Vizeu's effort at close range. And then, we should mention, James, we've got the kind of headline-grabbing cameo from Shunsuke Nakamura, right? He came on as a sub in the 83rd minute of this game at 2-2. What could possibly happen next? Well, what happened next was his very first kick of the ball was a corner right onto the head of Ogawa, who made it 3-2. So I think the sort of headlines from this game are, Yokohama FC made it four straight wins. And they're looking, again, it's early on, but you can't do better than that, right? Four straight wins. I think they've been pretty fortunate, actually, because they have let in, two goals here, and they let in a couple against Omiya, didn't they, on the opening day as well. So I'm not sure they might be a bit lucky to have 12 points from 12 so far. But Koki Ogawa, fair play to him. He seems to be getting things together after a rotten couple of years he had at Iwata. He's got three goals already this season. And on Mito, I don't know whether to worry or not, because in the season previews, we confidently said, like, we know what Mito are about under Akiba as coach, so they'll be mid-table and safe. But they're struggling for points at the moment. And even though I thought Korsuke Kinoshita was hugely impressive in the first half of this game, he faded with the rest of the team in the second. And for all of his undoubted quality, and I think he scored two goals already and had an assist in this game, they're struggling a little bit. So good stuff from Yokohama FC, if a little bit fortunate. And Mito, I think we're none the wiser, James. They're enigmatic as ever.
Yeah, I was going to ask Yokohama FC. We know that they've got a good attack, obviously, because they're scoring plenty of goals and they're bailing out the defence. But do you think they'll always be able to bail out the defence, or do you think that's going to be something that is going to be a problem as the season progresses?
I think if the goals dry up, at the right end of the pitch from a Yokohama FC point of view, then there is going to be renewed sort of a scrutiny of that defence, isn't it? I think I'm not quite sure about the system that they're playing right now with three. I think they played with three centre backs, three defenders in this game, and I'm not sure if that's going to be Shuhei Yamada's kind of preferred style, de facto, whether that might change. But I think that's quite a risky. Strategy for me. I think I would perhaps four, flat back, four defenders. This is how British I am, James. I always think four defenders, 4-4-2 is best. But yeah, three defenders is risky. I think what they're doing is leveraging the fact that Sven Brodersen, for my money, is probably one of the top three keepers in the division. I'm still, quite surprised that he stayed after relegation last year. I thought he would be one of the guys that would get cherry picked to go and stay in J1. So I think the combination of a slightly shaky back three, but Sven Brodersen in goal should stand them in good stead. But yeah, I don't think they've looked particularly impressive defensively. I mean, I'm saying that Brodersen's one of the best keepers in the division, but I think five goals conceded, right? In the four games so far. So not a great record, but yeah, I do think, like I said, I think Yokohama FC definitely a work in progress, and even though they've won 4 out of 4, I don't think they've been imperious at all. I mean, all the victories by a single goal. I think they do have work to do in the defence, and possibly Daiki Nakashio might have a place in that back line. I think we're recording this on Tuesday morning, but yesterday Yokohama had a kind of a J League Elite League games, the kind of reserve match against Marinos, and I don't know what the score is, but I know Nakashio played in the first half certainly of that game, so I think he's been injured and is coming back. So yeah, maybe there'll be some personnel changes in that back three, or possibly a switch to a back four. But yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think defensively they have not looked like a promotion winning team just yet, but at the other end there, maybe we can say attack wise they have.
Okay, great, let's move on then. The second game that you chose was Nagasaki against Oita, and Nagasaki finally got their first win. They beat Oita 4-1, thanks to two goals from Cristiano and one each from Edgar Jr. and Ryo Okui, after Shun Nagasawa gave Oita the lead. John, what happened here?
This was a very sort of exciting Kyushu derby until the 55th minute, when Nagasaki went 3-1 up and basically killed the game off. But we'll start at the start, I guess, James. Just 8 minutes on the clock, Oita actually went in front here. I thought this was a pretty poor 60 seconds from Takashi Kasahara, who I think was making his debut in goal for Nagasaki, right? So he gave the ball away for a cheap throw-in, pretty much level with the edge of his own penalty area. And then the ball was crossed in by Yuto Misao for Shun Nagasawa to head in. And Stuart Smith's not here to give the kind of goalkeeper's perspective on this, but look, Kasahara's positioning wasn't good. He was too far over, and the ball actually ended up going in quite centrally in the goal mouth, and I thought that was a poor goal for Nagasaki to give away. But considering the sort of embarrassment of riches they have up front, they're never going to be short of a chance or two themselves, and they were level pretty much straight away, weren't they? Okui crossed, and Edgar Jr. chested down for Cristiano to volley in a pretty sumptuous strike for 1-1 in the 10th minute. I thought the turning point in this game for me, James, and I want to hear your thoughts on this as well, was in first half stoppage time. Nagasaki were given a penalty for a handball by Oita centre-back Pereira. It looked on the replay, and I've only seen one replay from one angle, it looked like a bad decision. It looked like the ball came off his chest. Even though Pereira, perhaps he tucked his arms kind of behind his back, which I think made it, his body language looked a bit like it was a handball, but I don't think it actually was. Anyway, the penalty was given. and Edgar Jr. converted it and made it 2-1. I thought that was a kind of important turning point in this game. We should add, I think Nagasaki had, talking of Yokohama FC being lucky, just as a quick throwback, Nagasaki had a goal wrongly disallowed for a handball, didn't they? Away at Yokohama FC. Yeah, I think that was Edgar Jr. So, you know, in terms of what goes around comes around is a kind of a saying that's often associated with refereeing decisions, isn't it? So Nagasaki perhaps got the luck this time. And then, yeah, as I mentioned, in this 55th minute, Ken Tokura broke away down the Nagasaki left and then squared for Cristiano to fire in the third. Possibly a hint of a foul by Tokura on the shoulder of his defender. The defender ended up in a heap on the ground. I actually don't think that was a foul. But I think maybe if you're the Oita, you know, Oita supporters and backroom staff, probably furious with the referee on two decisions there. And it was 4-1, as you mentioned, when Okri took a shot from outside the box and that was deflected in midway through the second half. So, yeah, the game was up at 4-1. But I do want to give, Kasahara a bit of a positive mention as well. He made some really good saves late on in the game to preserve that 4-1 lead for Nagasaki. And that's how it finished. I think... Nagasaki probably deserved more points than they had going into this game from the three rounds so far. And I think this can probably be a pretty good springboard for them to kind of move up the table now, I expect. For Oita, even though they were unlucky with the penalty call here, I thought they looked pretty ragged. I know there were a lot of players missing, which I think... talking to Sean last week, obviously they're managing this horrible March schedule of playing games every midweek. So I guess they rested players here because they had the league game against Mito on Wednesday night. Yeah, I'm not really sure if the squad rotation leaves you looking so much like an average or below average mid-table J2 side, perhaps rotation's not the answer. So yeah, I actually thought if you looked at these two squads before the kickoff and asked someone to guess which one was in J1 last year, you wouldn't guess it was Oita based on the team they put out. So I think there are perhaps some... I didn't really fancy them before the season started. And again, it's early, but I don't fancy them at all, really, to get into the top six based on what I've seen already. And Nagasaki, I think this will probably prove to be quite an important springboard for them for the rest of the early part of the season. But I mean, what do you reckon, James? How about that penalty decision on Pereira? Do you agree with me it was a bad decision or what?
Yeah, I think it was very harsh. And I remember I read Daniel's Nagasaki Blue and Orange blog, and he said pretty much what you said. It was pretty similar to the goal that was disallowed for Nagasaki a couple of weeks ago, same kind of contact. And so maybe it was some kind of like karma or justice for that disallowed goal a couple of weeks ago. I think it probably was a poor decision, but as we said before, I've reached the point where I think I just accept now anything that hits an arm is going to be a penalty. But that one, I think it might have been the chest more than the arm. So I think it was probably a bad call. But sometimes you get those in your favor, sometimes you don't. And Nagasaki took advantage of it. And what I noticed from this was that Cristiano and Edgar Jr. seem to be having a lot of fun and a lot of smiles. Obviously, it's easy to have a lot of fun and smile when you're thrashing the opposition. But it seemed like everything was working for them. And that goal, Cristiano's first goal, was a really nice combination, like you mentioned. And I think you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if Nagasaki now go on quite a long unbeaten run, because to get your first win is great. And to do it so emphatically must be a huge confidence boost. And as for Oita, I know they've got a busy schedule and you've got to manage your squad and rotate your squad, but it seems like they have managed the squad quite badly this week or last week, because they didn't play very well against Mito on Wednesday night, I don't think. Got a 1-1 draw there. And they did not play very well here either. And, you know, losing 4-1 after going 1-0 up is pretty dreadful, isn't it? So they... got to be worried, I think, because they've got another... We're only halfway through March. They've got another couple of weeks of this schedule. And if they can't figure out how to use their squad and their resources, then they're going to find they're still down near the bottom of the table in a couple of weeks' time. So, yeah, it's concerning for Oita. And I think Nagasaki will be feeling pretty good today. So we'll see how things go in the next couple of weeks. Okay. One more game that you chose. This was another fairly high scoring one. This was Machida 3, Okayama 1. Machida went 3-0 up thanks to Yu Hirakawa and then two goals from Shusuke Ota. And then Ryo Kawamoto pulled one back for Okayama, but it wasn't enough. So Machida also flying high at the top or near the top of the table. John, what did you think about this game?
Yeah, plenty to get our teeth into here, I think, James. So yeah, Machida now in second place, 3 wins and a draw for them so far, whereas Okayama, yeah, tasted defeat for the first time this season, didn't they? I know Sean Carroll went along to this game. We probably get his thoughts next time he's on the pod, if he remembers anything about this game by then. But yeah, I think one thing I talked about with Sean last week was how Machida have been sort of collecting points without really dazzling anybody or blowing anybody's socks off. I think to some extent they did dazzle in a kind of a limited way. At times in this game, I thought the opening goal in about the 20th minute showed a side of Machida's game we don't talk about very much, which is their kind of good pressing, because Dudu did really well to rob the ball back from Okayama, didn't he? And then when he played in Taiki Hirato, he did something which not many players do, and it's nutmeg Yasutaka Yanagi, and then roll the ball across the goal for Yu Hirakawa to score his first J-League goal. So that was 1-0 early on, and good kind of defending from the front, if you like, turning defence into attack from Machida, which was good to see. I think in this game, again, similar to the Nagasaki Oita one, the big turning point, in a sense, was in the first half stoppage time, because Mitch Duke played in Kiwara Miyazaki at the other end, and Machida's keeper, Koki Fukui, made a really good save to block that shot. I think if the teams had gone in at halftime at 1-1, the second half might have been very different. As it was, 8 minutes into the second half, again, quite similar to the Nagasaki Oita game, this match was over as a contest, really, because Shusuke Ota scored his double. His first goal, James, was the kind of volley which you're sort of expecting. That could have gone anywhere, I feel. I'm sure he will tell you that he fully intended for it to, like, you know, travel into the roof of the net with the speed of a Shinkansen. It was an absolutely amazing I'm not sure how he got so much power on that volley to get into the goal, but it was a fantastic volley. I don't think he'll be scoring those on the regular, but yeah, fantastic volley from him. His second goal, Machida stirred a bit more conventional. A breakaway counter-attack down the right and a Hirakawa cross to the far post and Ota tapped in. So yeah, Machida 3-0 up at that point. And I don't know if I'd say they were cruising, but they were clearly comfortable at that stage. The controversial moment was a red card in the 72nd minute in this one, I suppose, James. Okayama finally got their Australian attacker, Stefan Mork, into the country and into the team. And then pretty soon, I think, after coming on in this game, how can we describe this? He just sort of bumped into Hirakawa, didn't he? Mm-hmm. They came together. The ball was somewhere else. The ball wasn't even there. And the referee very quickly and very confidently produced a red card for Mauk. And surely the J-League are going to look at this and take it back. I have to say, as much of a fan of Machida as I am, I thought the reaction from the Machida players was a little bit small time. Because you had the captain, Hirato, getting in the referee's face, asking for a red card. You had sort of like, I don't know if he's shithouse number one, because Dudu's at the club.
Dudu's got to be top of that list.
Yeah, definitely vice shithouse, Shohei Takahashi, was like waving bye-bye in Mauk's face. Yeah. And I thought, considering you're 3-0 up at home with about 18 minutes left, is that all really necessary? You know, it seemed a bit extra for me. So yeah, that wasn't great. Stefan Mork must wonder what kind of a league he's transferred into. It's like, what did I do? What's going on? But yeah, as you mentioned, Ryo Kawamoto, yeah, he swept in a goal with about 10 minutes left. It was actually a really good team move, and I think he ended up scoring from about 16 yards, which by his standards is a bit of a tap-in. You know, he's a big fan of the long range shot, isn't he? So yeah, Okayama, Machida 3, Okayama won the final score. And I think for Machida, they did show quite a lot of quality in this game. And again, I was looking at their starting lineup and their bench. I think Sean tweeted out, you know, Chong Teze and Vinicius Araujo on the bench You know, as well as having like Dudu, Taiki, Hirato, others, Kazumi Yamaguchi to call on. So that again, I'm beating up on Oita this week. I don't know why, but if you know Nagasaki and Oita's squad's looking a lot more impressive than Oita's, based on the games this weekend. And Okayama, I think they'll be disappointed, obviously, but they were going to lose at some point. And I think they were in this game for quite a while. I think once they'd let in the third goal, it was tough for them, but they did pull the goal back even with 10 men. So I think they do have some encouragement for future games as well. But I think we saw that Machida might be, again, to draw another parallel with an Nagasaki game, Machida sort of starting to move through the gears a little bit, I felt, in this game.
Yeah, I think we can put it down as kind of a reality check for Okayama. Not a bad loss, but, you know, something that will probably help them in the long term as they look back on this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Machida's still rumbling on. They're doing pretty well, like you said. That red card incident, I think, was just embarrassing all round, because I don't know why Mork needed to try and block that player off. I don't know why that player, after trotting into Mork's shoulder, went down like that. I don't know why the referee pulled out a red card, and I don't know why all the other idiots came running around waving in Mork's face and all that stuff. So I think that just was pretty bad.
Unedifying, yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone had a bad time there. And yeah, it kind of ruined the game as a contest, but it was already 3-0 by then, wasn't it? So maybe didn't alter things that much, but it did mean that it was really hard for Okayama to mount any kind of comeback. But they're still doing okay this year. I think losing to Machida is not the end of the world. And like we keep saying, it's still very early in the season. They're still doing pretty well. They've won 2, drawn 1, and that was their first loss. So yeah, I don't think that they need to worry too much. There's something that they can learn from and they can use to help them.
I think it's probably the takeaways that Takashi Kamura will have is, I thought the defending on the second and third goals was a bit loose. And I think that'll be, they couldn't do anything about the red card probably. But I think he will be probably in there. I mean, it's not for me to tell him how to do his job, but if it were me, I think I'd be most of the training this week will be on a shape work for the back four.
Yeah, I think so. And that's something that can be fixed quite easily, I think. And so, yeah, they should be all right, I think. Yeah, OK, that's it for part one. I'll be back in a second to round up the rest of the match day 4 fixtures. J-Talk Extra
Time. Welcome back to J-Talk Extra Time. Let's round up the rest of the match day 4 games, starting with Saturday's early kickoff between Vegalta Sendai and Iwate Gruja Morioka, where Sendai ran out 3-0 winners. Iwate had a couple of reasonable efforts in the opening quarter of an hour, but Sendai soon took control of the game. Taishi Brandon Nozawa in the Iwate goal saved well from Foginho, and a Masato Nakayama flicked header went just wide before half-time. Yasushi Endo opened the scoring in the 42nd minute with a shot from the edge of the area that went in off the bar. Iwate had good chances early in the second half too, but Daichi Sugimoto, the Sendai keeper, was equal to the task. Then, 2 goals in quick succession from Masato Nakayama finished Iwate off. The first, a right-footed shot into the bottom corner, and the second, a cool left-footed dink over the onrushing keeper. Also on Saturday afternoon, Vanfore Kofu needed a stoppage time equaliser to rescue a point at home to Montedio Yamagata. Yoshiki Fujimoto gave the visitors the lead in the 5th minute when he headed in a corner. After that, it seemed like Kofu had plenty of shots from outside the area. Sho Araki, Motoki Hasegawa and Riku Nozawa all tried, but either shot straight at Masaki Goto or over. Fujimoto had a chance to double the lead in the 53rd minute, but his volley went just wide, and Yamagata regretted it when in stoppage time, a weak goal kick found a Kofu midfielder, was touched on by Willian Lira, and Junma Miyazaki calmly slotted under Goto to equalise. FC Ryukyu got their first win of the season after twice coming from behind away to Renault for Yamaguchi. Shuhei Otsuki forced a good save from Junto Taguchi in the 9th minute, and in the 21st minute, he gave Yamaguchi the lead when he backheeled Kento Hashimoto's cross through his marker's legs. Takuma Abe levelled things in the 34th minute. The Ryukyu striker unmarked 12 yards out to side-foot home a corner. Parity only lasted 12 minutes as Odsky got his second when a rebound fell nicely for him on the penalty spot. Ryukyu drew level again in the 70th minute thanks to an own goal by Hirofumi Watanabe with what would have been a pretty good header had he done it at the other end. 6 minutes later, Ryukyu were in front when Koki Kiyotake spurned a shooting chance when one-on-one and elected instead to play a perfectly weighted pass for Ryunosuke Noda to make it 3-2. The other game on Saturday saw Tokushima Vortis get their fourth draw of the season at home to Ruaso Kumamoto. Mushaga Bakenga opened the scoring in the 31st minute with a powerful header from an Akira Hamashita cross, but Kumamoto were level before the break. Neat footwork down the right led to a cross for Shun Ito, who struck powerfully with the outside of his right foot into the roof of the net. Ruaso went in front just after half-time as Toshiki Takahashi was unmarked in the middle of the Tokushima area to head his team into the lead. It was short-lived though, as Bakenga got his second a few minutes later. He turned home another Yamashita cross. Both teams tried to get a winner, but neither could, and it ended 2-2. On Sunday, Blaublitz Akita pulled off a perhaps surprising 1-0 win over a still winless Albirex Niigata. In terrible weather, most chances in the first half came from corners, and the best was a back post volley from Tachi Koyanagi that went over. Akita keeper Yudai Tanaka was busy early in the second half, producing a string of good saves, and Akita's goal came courtesy of Ibuki Yoshida, who ran onto a through ball from Hayate Take, rounded Ryosuke Kojima, the Niigata goalie, and just managed to put enough pace on his shot to see it trickle over the line ahead of the chasing defender. Niigata's best chance fell to Shion Honma, but Tanaka saved well with his leg to preserve the lead and, ultimately, the 3 points. Tochigi and Omiya drew 1-1. Masahito Ono scored for Omiya in the 28th minute, volleying a perfectly weighted corner past Shuhei Kawata. Kenta Fukumori hit the bar for Tochigi in the 38th minute, and Omiya wanted a penalty in the 60th minute when Ryo Shinzato thought he was pulled down as he tried to shoot. The referee disagreed, however, and 10 minutes later, a Tokach equaliser from a low free kick into the bottom right-hand corner made things 1-1. By my count, that's the third time Omiya have drawn or lost after taking the lead. The other was a loss after bringing the game back from 2-0 to 2-2, so still work to be done for Masahiro Shimoda. Tokyo Verdy maintained their unbeaten start while ending Zespa Kusatsu Gunma's. Gunma thought they'd taken the lead through Toshiya Tanaka in the 10th minute, but after a consultation between the referee and his assistant, the goal was disallowed for handball. Correctly, I think, as Tanaka used an arm to control the ball before shooting. Toru Takagiwa in the Verdy goal made several good saves, and Gunma had another goal disallowed. Shu Hiramatsu for offside, before Rihito Yamamoto got the only goal of the game 10 minutes from time, cutting in from the right and nutmegging the keeper to take all 3 points back to Tokyo. But not before Gunma had a third disallowed goal, another offside, against Yuki Kawakami. And finally, Zeigen Kanazawa went down 1-0 at home to Jeff United in the game broadcast on the J-League's international YouTube channel. Tomoya Miki got the goal from a low Solomon Sakuragawa cross that the Kanazawa defence should have dealt with in the 11th minute. Sakuragawa and his strike partner Keita Buwanika caused plenty of problems for the home defence, but Kanazawa grew into the game and created plenty of chances, especially in the second half. Shota Arai saved well from a Yohei Toyoda header and a Masamichi Hayashi shot, while Toyoda also hit the side netting when unmarked at the back post and Rikito Sugiura shot over. Still, at least we didn't get snowed on. That's all for the roundup. Next, John's going to help me preview match day 5.
Welcome back, everyone. John's back and he's going to help me preview match day 5. We've got fixtures spread out quite nicely over the weekend, which I know you like, John. On Saturday the 19th, 1 o'clock, there are two games. There's Akita against Kanazawa and Omiya against Tokushima. Two games at 2 o'clock, Niigata against Kofu and Oita against Yamaguchi. And then one at 4 o'clock, Ryukyu against Mito. Any games there that interest you?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, James, the schedule this weekend has there's something interesting about each game, because we're reaching a point where we've had a kind of pretty decent look at all the teams after, you know, sort of four rounds of action. To pick one, I think Niigata's home game against Kofu is an intriguing one, because neither side has really had a great start to the season, have they? I think Niigata still yet to get a win. They drew the first three and then they lost away at Akita last time out. So Niigata will be wanting to get a home win. Not desperately yet, but I think they haven't looked as good at all as they did last season. Kofu as well are one of these teams where, you know, the natural order of things has them fifth or sixth in the table, but they're only mid table at the moment. And I think they had the big defeat, Okayama, right, on day one.
Yeah.
And then they've not really righted the ship fully since then. So I think Niigata Kofu is a good clash between two teams that have definitely underperformed so far.
Yeah, that's a good choice as well, because that's the game that's being shown on the J-League's international YouTube channel. So any of our listeners who are outside Japan are going to tune into that. I think they'll be in for a good game there. Because Niigata have been playing some nice stuff. It's the same problem. They're not finishing their chances. For me, of course, I'm going to watch Akita against Kanazawa on the freshly ploughed pitch up there. I don't know if I'll enjoy it, but I'll watch it. The game that looked interesting to me, though, was Oita against Yamaguchi. Because, like we just talked about, Oita's problems or concerns earlier, I think they really need to get something from this game. And Yamaguchi been playing some quite good stuff. They've been scoring a few goals, but they've also been conceding some goals. So I think they'll be if Oita are going to get a result, then maybe Yamaguchi are a team that they might get it against. But you know, it could go either way, so that's why I'm quite interested in that one. On Sunday the 20th, there's another five games, all starting at 2 o'clock. There's Iwate against Tochigi, Yamagata against Sendai, Jeff against Gunma, Tokyo Verde against Machida, and Okayama against Yokohama FC. And then there's one extra on Monday, the 21st, because that's a national holiday. At 1 o'clock, Kumamoto play Nagasaki. So any games that interest you from those ones, John?
Yeah, well, I think Kumamoto and Nagasaki, just by dint of the fact that it's the sole game on a kind of Monday national holiday, will be worth a look. And yeah, we want to see if Nagasaki can continue the form that they started to show in that big win over Oita, right, last weekend. I think from the Sunday games, I'm going to be boring and pick Yokohama FC. I know that listeners might be pulling over to the side of the road to tweet complaints, because I always seem to talk about Yokohama FC because I live in Yokohama. But this time, the reason is because they're top of the table with four wins from four. But I actually think they are going to have a pretty stiff test away at Okayama on Sunday, because Okayama are going to be smarting after that first defeat of the season at Machida. And as we talked about right at the start of the top of the show, you know, Yokohama's defence has not been watertight in the opening four games, although they've had a really good keeper to bail them out in Sven Brodersen. So I expect goals from this game, and I actually think Yokohama FC, they're due to have a little bit of a wobble here. So I wouldn't be surprised if this game is a score draw. I actually think Okayama might win. I hope they don't, because my son will be disappointed. But I think Okayama might take 3 points here.
Yeah, I agree. I think that will be a good one. And listeners, any complaints, please direct them to at JTalkETJohn on Twitter.
Yes, my name's James Taylor.
And I agree. I think that looks good. The game that stood out for me was Tokyo Verde against Machida, two unbeaten teams. We talked earlier about Machida, how they're playing pretty well, seem to be moving through the gears now. Verde, Stu talked about them on the first match day. I haven't really mentioned them much since, but they're doing pretty well. They've got two wins and two draws from their four games, and they're going along quite nicely. So it'll be interesting to see if they are both still unbeaten, or who is unbeaten at the end of that match. I think that'll be good. And the other one, maybe Yamagata Sendai, a kind of Tohoku matchup up there, that might be interesting as well. Especially as actually Sendai They've kind of been going along quietly, but they're still unbeaten as well. 2 wins and 2 draws. I hadn't noticed just looking at the table now. But yeah, I think plenty of interesting stuff and plenty that we'll be able to watch spread over the weekend. So that's good. Let's hope we get plenty of interesting matches. So that's all from us. Thanks, John, for your insight and your analysis.
No problem. Anytime. Oh, sorry, James.
That's
no
all right. Yeah, thanks to everyone who downloads and shares and likes and retweets and sends complaints to John on Twitter. Especially thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. And if you want to know more about that, please go to patreon.com/jtalkpod. Of course, thank you for listening. But stay tuned, because here comes Magic Mike Innes with the JTalk Short Corner.
JTalk Extra Time.
Hello everyone and welcome to JTalk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host Mike Innes and in this episode I'll be looking back on the opening round of fixtures in the new J3 season and previewing games coming up in round 2. Straight into the action, and the J3 2022 campaign finally began on a bright, sunny afternoon at Mitsuzawa, where YSCC Yokohama moved into the post-Yuki Stauff era under new coach Kenji Nakada, and fans got their first glimpse of the Toshiya Miura revolution at FC Gifu. Miura gave starts to no fewer than 9 new players, including former J1 stars Tomoya Ugajin and Junya Tanaka, returning heroes Heniki and Yoshihiro Shoji, and J-Talk Short Corner favourites Kosuke Fujioka and Charles Unduka taking the field against his former side. For YSCC, there were pro debuts for rookie midfielder Ryohei Wakizaka and former non-leaguer Kyosuke Hashimoto in defence. Gifu controlled much of the possession, especially in the second half, but ultimately couldn't break down the home defence, although Heniki's 18th minute header had Ryosuke Sagawa diving to tip the ball onto the woodwork and away. And soon after half-time, Unduka almost broke the deadlock when he latched on to Freire's long ball into the box, controlled it with his left foot and fired against Sagawa's near post. At the other end, Gifu had keeper Kazushige Kirihata to thank when, in the 44th minute, he saved brilliantly a header from Riku Furuyado, who'd ghosted behind the defender to meet Kento Donate's curling cross. But the game ended with a final score, YSCC 0, Gifu 0. A battling performance and a useful point for Nakada and YSCC. For Gifu, some positives, but a third straight year in which they've opened the season with a goalless draw, and as one forlorn Japanese fan tweeted following the final whistle, "After all, spring did not come." And so the first goal of the new J3 season was scored by rookie Tojiro Kubo in the 7th minute of Fujieda MyFC's home game against Gainare Tottori. Kubo and fellow debutant Tomoyuki Doi put in an electrifying first half display that underlined the attacking potential of Fujieda under ex-Tottori coach Daisuke Sudo, while Kim Jong-song's Gainare looked as threadbare defensively as they did last season. MyFC began with 5 new players in the starting lineup: Kubo, Doi and a trio who've joined from Roasso Kumamoto: goalkeeper Kei Uchiyama, defender Keisuke Ogasawara and returning central midfielder Taisuke Mizuno, while Kosuke Masutani took his place in the Tottori defence following a move from Okayama. Despite an encouraging opening few minutes for the visitors, it was hosts Fujieda who went in front, Doi and Akiyuki Yokoyama winning the battle for possession on the edge of the area and feeding Ryota Iwabuchi, whose low cross was converted by Kubo at the far post. And on 19 minutes, the same player made it 2-0. A long ball from Jun Suzuki being knocked down by Doi, while Tottori's Naoya Uozato and Kosuke Chiku got in each other's way, allowing time and space for the ex-Chukyo University student to curl it round Uchiyama and into the net. As if to emphasise the importance of taking your chances, Yuya Taguchi then struck the post when through on goal, and Tottori's chance to find a way back into the game before the break disappeared. Indeed, by the time the whistle blew at the end of the first half, it was 3-0 as Doi sprinted onto a through ball by Yokoyama and sent in a shot that looped off Uchiyama and bounced over the line. Gainane pushed forward in the second half, and Taguchi and Daichi Ishikawa both had chances to score, but MyFC held firm, and the game duly ended Fujieda 3, Tottori 0. A clean sheet, 3 goals and 3 points for Sudo. Kim may feel he needs more time to work with his players after a COVID-interrupted pre-season at Tottori, but in the face of aggressive attacking play, they looked tentative. In the Saturday evening fixture, SC Sagamihara, back in J3 after a year's absence, recorded a 1-0 win over Azul Claro Numazu. There were 7 new starters for Sagamihara, including the veteran pair of defender Hiroki Mizumoto and striker Takayuki Funayama, but it was 20-year-old Yuan Matsuhashi who got the only goal 8 minutes before the interval, volleying home from close range Ryoma Ishida's cross after Numazu had failed to clear a set piece. Ex-Yamaguchi debutant Kensei Ukita and substitute Tsubasa Ando missed clear opportunities to extend Sagamihara's lead. Numazu, who started with Noah Kenshin Brown up front and Ryo Watanabe on the bench, had some possession but little attacking threat. Moving on to the Sunday games, another relegated side, Matsumoto Yamaga, also began the season with a victory as the Ptarmigans scored deep in stoppage time to win at Kamatamare Sanuki. Matsumoto began with newcomer Victor in goal and returning Paulinho in midfield, while Senuki awarded debuts to rookies Mizuki Uchida and Kanta Usui in the wide midfield roles, and to big forward Kohei Matsumoto, fresh out of the JFL. And it was the former FC Tiamo Hirakata striker who gave the home side the lead in the 28th minute, bundling home a low cross by teenage hopeful Shoya Koyama. But the away side took advantage of Kamatamari's familiar inability to defend a set piece, drawing level in first half injury time when Kazuhiro Sato's corner was flicked on at the near post for the unmarked Ayumu Yokoyama to head in, a first career goal for the 19-year-old. Yamaga had the better of the second period and came close to a goal when Lukao's header brought an excellent save out of Takuya Takahashi. Senaki, however, must have thought they'd done enough to earn a point right up until the 93rd minute when, at another corner kick, they left in plenty of space Ryo Toyama, who side-footed through a crowd of players and inside the far post. A more eagle-eyed referee may have spotted the ball striking the arm of Matsumoto's Ren Komatsu as it made its way goal-bound, but somehow that's not how life is for Kamatamari and their fans. Final score, Senuki 1, Matsumoto 2. At least a glimmer of attacking prowess from Kamatamari to take a glass half-full view. A surge of confidence for Hiroshi Nanami and his Yamaga squad. Opening round wins for Sagamihara and Matsumoto then, but there were home losses for the two other sides to come down from J2. Against a team many expect to challenge for promotion this year, Katare Toyama, Ehime FC introduced 8 new players to their lineup, including the experienced pair of goalkeeper Kenta Tokushige and defender Ryota Moriwaki, plus forwards Takumi Sasaki and Riki Matsuda. For their part, Toyama had defender Shoma Kamata and striker Shota Kawanishi among four new starters, although one of them, rookie midfielder Kyosuke Kameyama, was to go off injured late in the first half. Toyama had somewhat the better of things during that opening period, forcing Tokushige into action on several occasions, but it was Ehime who took the lead 6 minutes after the restart. New boy Sasaki exchanged passes with Takashi Kondo, cut in from the left and was given space to set himself and fire a shot into the top right-hand corner from 20 yards. Within 5 minutes, though, Katane coach Nobuhiro Ishizaki had made a triple substitution which changed the game. One of the replacements, Yohei Ono, quickly bringing his side level when he chested down a well-judged pass by Yuma Matsumoto and finished comfortably. Moments later, Tokushige pulled off a brilliant triple save to deny Kawanishi twice and then Ono, the Ehime back line seemingly having lost all sense of resilience. And with Riki Matsuda on his debut, fluffing a great chance to put the home side back in front, Toyama ramped up the pressure, Kawanishi hitting the bar with a free header, and in the 84th minute, the ex-Gifu man lofted a ball into the middle. Ono headed it downwards and Tokushige let it slip through his hands for a distinctly soft deciding goal. Final score, Ehime 1, Toyama 2, a perfect example of Ishizaki's game management and squad depth combining to take the points for his team. Disappointment for Ehime, although Sasaki, a 23-year-old signing from Sendai, looked lively beyond his goal. There was disappointment too for Giravans Kitakyushu on their return to the division, losing at home to AC Nagano Parseiro. In his first game in charge for Nagano, Yuki Stealth threw into the starting 11 all three of the players brought with him from YSCC, as well as striker Takuya Miyamoto. Kitakyushu boss Kenichi Amano began with three new players, including forward Yuya Takazawa, the man charged with providing some much-needed attacking focus. But such focus wasn't in evidence in this game, some attractive Giravans approach play not getting the sort of finish it perhaps deserved, and it was Miyamoto who demonstrated a basic principle of being a target man, getting himself on the end of a Yuta Sato cross to bury the header and give Nagano a 55th minute lead. 15 minutes from time, Parseiro confirmed the win, substitute Carlos Duke crossing from the left for Yuki Morikawa to head unchallenged past Kenshin Yoshimaru, sending the small band of travelling supporters into paroxysms of delight. Final score, Kitakyushu 0, Nagano 2. Plenty of work to do for Amano and his Giravans squad. A very promising start to Stealth's reign at Parseiro. Elsewhere, Iwaki FC had to travel all the way to Kagoshima United to make their J-League bow, defender Kyowan Hoshi and striker Kotaro Arima making their club debuts to provide a level of pro experience for the newcomers. Under Naoto Otake, there were seven new starters for the home side, including midfielder Yuji Kimura from Mito, experienced forward Koki Arata, and two players from Niigata, centre-back Shosei Okamoto and attacking midfielder Frank Romero. Iwaki took the lead in as early as the fourth minute, but they did so in controversial circumstances. Their goal-scoring right-back Riku Saga sprinting to get on the end of an angled pass by Hiroto Iwabuchi and appearing to give a push to the back of Rei Yonezawa before cutting inside and beating homekeeper Fuma Shirasaka. Otake's side gradually took control and drew level just before half-time when Kimura whipped in a free kick from the left-hand side and Anita beat rookie keeper Shuhei Shikano to get in a header that sneaked inside the post. Final score, Kagoshima 1, Iwaki 1. Kagoshima looking a work in progress. Iwaki, as expected, a tough opponent, up for the fight. Last year's J-League newcomers, Tegevajaro Miyazaki, began their second campaign in assured fashion at home to Vanrari Hachinohe. After something of a tempestuous close season in the transfer market and with captain Kenji Dai out injured, new coach Yasushi Takasaki selected five of his winter signings, including Yuta Shimozawa from Akita in central midfield and a new-look attacking partnership in Masato Kudo and Takuma Sonoda, while Hachinohe fielded Sonoda's former Kagoshima teammate Yusei Kayanuma up front, plus the ex-Imabari pair Jun Arima and Koichi Miao among six new starters. Miyazaki went ahead just after the half hour, the visiting defence unable to deal with an in-swinging free kick, and the ball came to Sonoda, who turned and hammered it home from inside the goal area. Hachinohe came close to an equaliser 2 minutes into the second half when Anima had two efforts blocked in quick succession after good work down the right-hand side by returning Vanrare hero Masashi Kokubun. Looking the stronger side, Tegevajaro sealed the win with 7 minutes to go as Yudai Tokunaga and substitute Yuki Okada combined well to set up Shimozawa, whose angled shots from 15 yards seemed to elude Hayate Tsuta in the visiting goal. Final score, Miyazaki 2, Hachinohe 0. An unexpectedly comfortable victory for Yasushi Takasaki's side. A tip of the hat to the six Vanrare fans who made the long trip to stand behind the goal for scant reward. Lastly, a penalty on the half hour gave Toshihiro Hattori's Fukushima United a 1-0 win at FC Imabari. Both teams began with three close season signings, including experienced defender Junya Hosokawa and right back Wataru Noguchi for Imabari, and attacking midfielder Hikaru Arai and forward Junya Takahashi for Fukushima. The decisive moment came when Arai's shot hit the outstretched arm of Hosokawa in the penalty area. Fukushima's 2021 top scorer Hiroki Higuchi confidently dispatching the spot kick. An underwhelming start to the season for Imabari, whose only real attempt on goal came via an injury time header from Wakaba Shimoguchi that went over the bar, while Fukushima, with Higuchi pulling the strings, Takashi and Kota Mori up front had pace, mobility and intent. That wraps up all the round one action, so just time now for a quick look ahead to the fixtures in round two. There are three games on Saturday the 19th of March. Two promotion hopefuls who dropped points in round one clash at Gifu, where Ehime are the visitors. And two sides who made impressive winning starts also meet. Could there be more goals between Fujieda and Nagano? And Junya Takahashi goes back to his old club as Fukushima visit Numazu. The other six games are on Sunday the 20th. Can Matsumoto build on their last gasp round one win? They go to a YSCC side who showed they can battle to keep a clean sheet. Iwaki stage their first ever J-League match. It's at the J-Village in Fukushima and it's a tough one against Sagamihara. There's a first Kyushu derby of the year as Miyazaki look to put more pressure on Kita Kyushu. Toyama head straight back to Ehime Prefecture looking for three more points from Imabari. Hachinohe face a second long trip down south as they go to another much-changed team in Kagoshima. And there's an opportunity for a confidence-boosting win for two of the division's smaller clubs as Sanuki meet Tottori. But with all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.